Thank you very much, Comrade Buick, for explaining quite a complex situation, especially the history of the wars. I wonder what he would have made of the Middle East conflicts going on at the present time. Anyway, I think everybody is, lots of people will be dying to ask questions, so please go ahead. One there.
A couple of points of interest that came up related to this. I was surprised reading recently the Marx and Engels website, the Marxist online website still has some of the Marx and Engels writings there. They have a page dedicated to Engels on war. And it seems that Engels took the view, contrary to a lot of radical opinion at the time, that a standing peacetime army is a sign of tyranny. He was in fact in favour of having standing professional armies in terms of national emergency, and in fact of having he thought that the workers' movement would improve conscription in Prussia rather than the lackadaisical way it was enforced at the time. Even more incredibly, in one of his letters, his view was that when the European war came, this is sometime in the 1870s, he wrote this, Germany would win it, and therefore social democracy would take over Germany. And therefore socialism would triumph in Europe through a world war and a German victory in that war. And just a final point, Marx and Engels, a lot of the time they did bring their actions to war back to class. So for instance, I think Marx argued with regards to Poland that the emancipation of Poland would undermine reaction in Germany because they all owned land in Poland, the aristocrats in Germany. And likewise, he made the same sort of argument about Ireland, that independence for Ireland would undermine the feudal power in Britain. And so there was some element of bringing it back to a class struggle rather than just simple, probably, yes, anti-Russian prejudice.
No, it's true that Engels did say all those things. And when the First World War broke out, those members of the German Social Democratic Party wanting to support the German government's war effort, they were quoting Engels all the time, saying, look, it's not you, Rosa Luxemburg and Karl Liebknecht, all right, it's us. This is what Engels said. But I think in Engels, well, not in his defence, but something can be said in his favour. Marx was writing in his study saying, support this war, support that war. I think Engels, if he had the chance, would actually have joined in. he did fight on the barricades in 1849 in Baden-Baden, I think, of all places. And if there had been a revolutionary war against Russia, he'd have been there. In fact, some of the other members of the Communist League, one of them, Joseph Weidemeyer, who Marx was in correspondence with, and some of Marx's famous correspondence, supported the American North in the American Civil War, and he rose to be a colonel, I think, like that. And other revolutionaries, did put their money where their mouth was. The Turkish army was, commanded in part by Polish and Hungarian refugees who wanted to defeat Russia for what Russia had done in Poland and Hungary in 1848 and 1849. Engels was, of course, known as the general, and his articles in the Daily Tribune, which he wrote for Marx, they're all detailed things about how to carry out a siege and the best way to do this. But somebody asked about what's happening in Syria today, but the Free Syrian Army, so-called, is employing the same tactics for sieging Aleppo as Engels was recommending for sieging Sebastopol and other places, where you build a tunnel underneath it and then you try to blow it up. But, that just shows how, outdated the war in Syria is.
Do you then these years did the Russian war take place against Western countries, and didn't Marx betray the socialist principle of not supporting his own bourgeoisie against other countries?
Well, that was the whole point of the talk. Did Marx betray socialist principles by taking sides in wars or by supporting that particular war, or in fact any war against Russia would have been Marx's position. I mean, he justified this as on the grounds that Russia represented a threat to capitalist political economic forms in the rest of Europe. He wouldn't have, in fact, have regarded himself as betraying socialist principles. But I think, he did have an anti-Russian obsession. There's another book he wrote, which is called the Secret Diplomatic History of the 18th Century, where he's trying to prove that various ministers in Britain were all agents, paid more or less paid agents of Russia, and he regarded Palmerston in particular. This is later in the 19th century as being a Russian agent. I mean, this is just conspiracy theory stuff. He was a friend of, he made contact with a Tory called David Urquhart, who was fanatically anti-Russian, and they exchanged correspondence and met. And I mean, there's worse in the 1877, Russian-Turkish War. Marx was opposed to intervention on the Russian side, and he wrote an anonymous article in the Daily Telegraph, exposing Gladstone as doing Russia's game because he was subscribing to a Russian loan to fight the war. So I think, well, I would think they were wrong on, you couldn't justify what Engels said about German victory in a war or Marx's anti-Russian obsession.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you say they're just opposing feudalism, but I think it went a bit deeper than that. I think they were opposing sort of autocracy, which is associated with feudalism, and a very oppressive state, and resistance to sort of scientific and technological change. And I think their attitude towards these feudal states, as typified in Russia, was quite similar in many ways, I think, to the more modern left's attitude to, say, like Nazi Germany during the Second World War. And I think there were obviously even some members of the SPGB who took a view that perhaps the workers were justified in taking sides in that war because the alternative was so unthinkably oppressive. And there was an element of democracy in that as well, because they also thought that as capitalism developed, a democracy would develop with it.
No, I agree that feudalism isn't the right word to describe the situation either in Russia or Austria or Prussia. It was, as you say, a police state and an absolutist regime and an autocracy. But if there'd been a war between Austria and Russia, Marx would have supported Austria. I mean, his position was more that, Russia is the, Tsarist Russia is the main threat, because in 1848 Russia had sent in troops to suppress an uprising in Hungary and also in. I don't think he was actually taking the attitude of the lesser evil, which is I think his position was it's in the interest of the revolution, which starts off as a bourgeois revolution. He thought would come rapidly into a social revolution. It was in the interest of the revolution to oppose Russia. I don't think he was saying in these wars, you take the lesser evil. For instance, in this war, I mentioned the one between France and Austria over Italy. Marx's attitude there was: will the outcome of this war, will it favour Russia or not? It wasn't whether it would further Italian independence. And he ought to have supported as a lesser evil the French-Italian side, not the Austrian side, which in fact is what his archenemy Ferdinand Lassalle did say. He said, "You should support France and Italy against Austria." But, in the private correspondence with Lassalle, Marx didn't take that attitude. And again, in the Franco-Prussian War of 1871. Which was a lesser evil. Marx was always opposed to the Bonaparte regime in France, and he could have welcomed the war because it would bring about the downfall of it. But in the end, actually, that was the one war where Marx did come near to something in the end, adopting a socialist position, saying a plague on both your houses. I hope you both lose. That particular war. Although at the start he was probably more sympathetic to Germany than to France. But the two social democratic deputies, August Bebel and Wilhelm Leibniz, they voted against the war credits, and in their private correspondence they were saying, "Oh, should they have done this?" Marx and Engels. But in fact, in the end, they came around to say, "Look, these two people have saved the honour of the First International."
Yes,
thank you,
Paul.
If the argument that Marx had been supporting wars against Russia,
yeah.
It's on the grounds that he saw that as a strong method by which capitalism would succeed in becoming a dominant system. Surely the corollary of that is that if the Tsarist regime wasn't overthrown, then that would maybe prevent capitalism becoming dominant. Or did he think that would be sort of just seriously hold it up? If you've got a view on that, and also if you think that Marx would surely have seen that capitalism would inevitably become a dominant system, and if so, why would he support courses of action which we would see day to day and many at any time should have seen as preposterous, really? Do you think there were some other motives in his mind, or maybe in his consciousness or in his subconsciousness, maybe some prejudices regarding certain populations within Russia?
I don't think he was prejudiced against Russian people. In fact, towards the end of his life, he learnt Russian and studied the peasant commune system there, and thought it even might be, if there was a socialist revolution in the rest of Europe, this peasant commune could be a transition to socialism in Russia. So he wasn't anti-Russian or anti-Slav. He was anti-Tsarism. But this is why I come back to the thing as to why, I said at the end, okay, you criticise Marx. What would socialists have done? What should socialists have done at the time? I think that's an academic question, because, like us, if you're a socialist, you must have some idea that socialism is on the agenda. I mean, it's probably an impossible position for a socialist to take psychologically, to say, look, okay, socialism isn't on the agenda, therefore we've got to support capitalism development in the meantime. I just don't think somebody who considered themselves a socialist could take up that position. I mean, in fact, it was a position taken up by a group of people in Russia, later on in the 19th century, called the legal Marxists, and that was their position. Capitalism is progressive in Russia, therefore we should support the development of capitalism there. And some of them ended up as ministers in the Tsarist government when he went through a reformist period after the revolution of 1905. No, Marx. I don't think Marx was anti-Russian or anti-Slav in that sense. I think he had this. I think it was an obsession. I mean, he just took it too far. Russia was a threat, or could be a threat, to the development of capitalist political forms in the rest of Europe. I don't think it actually was at the time, as you're pointing out. And every year went past, capitalism would have got stronger and stronger, and Tsarist Russia weaker and weaker. But one of the effects, in fact, of the Crimean War, maybe even a direct effect, was the liberation of the serfs, which was only five years later, because the Tsar who started the war died, and his son took over. And one of his moves was to modernize Russia by emancipating the serfs. So even that was a further weakening of Russia.
Can I ask a question?
You want to do it?
Right. I think it's true to say that in the Spanish Civil War, many socialists in the SPGB supported the International Brigade. I suppose it's a different situation, but could it help explain Marx's attitude towards Russia, that he saw it as being maybe just an anti-democratic state?
Well, I deliberately avoided answering the question on that because there's going to be a talk on this tomorrow, isn't there?
Oh, I see. Sorry about it.
No, no, I mean, I think you're wrong that many SPGB people supported the International Brigade. But, I mean, there was a discussion in the Socialist Party, and it's a good thing, too, that one of the things that we're concerned about is political democracy, because it's an advantage for for workers. It would have been a bad thing if everybody had taken the attitude that some groups took that there's no difference between fascism and democracy. They're all the one is as bad as the other. But I think Steve is going to talk about this tomorrow. But I'll say the same answer to you as I said to Dave there, that I don't think Marx is that concerned. Was the lesser evil? He was concerned with with democracy, and obviously wanted democratic forms to happen. I mean, that's it's already been mentioned that he was in favour of Irish independence, because Irish independence would weaken the landed aristocracy in Britain, and prepare the way for more democratic or less undemocratic state. And you made the same point about Polish independence having an effect on the landed aristocrats in Germany. So Marx, that was one of Marx's considerations. But I don't know whether it was to do. It's not quite the same as the Second World War or the Spanish Civil War, in my opinion.
Shall I go first?
Yes, please.
Did Marx make the same mistake over the American Civil War? Is one of the introductions to Volume 1 of Capital, he discusses being on the side of the North and against the South. Is that the same kind of problem? Because it really is workers killing workers, isn't it? So we should be opposed to that, essentially.
Well, I'm not sure the word mistake is the right thing, but yes, you're right. Marx did, in the American Civil War, he wanted the Northern side to win. And as I said, some of the German refugees from 1848 enrolled in the army because they had military experience. They was quickly to become the officers. But in one sense, of course, it was a triumph of capitalism over a slave society. But even the slave society in the South was a form of capitalism. Plantation capitalism. The money was invested in things and then invested in. Buying slaves and they were selling things on the market with a view to profit. I think you make a stronger case for supporting the northern side in the American Civil War than you could in some of the other wars. But I wouldn't use the word mistake in that particular instance. But I mean, the outcome was, of course, the triumph of capitalism there, and chattel slavery was replaced by wage slavery. There were, once again, people in the workers' movement who were opposed to supporting the North on the grounds that wage slavery was worse than chattel slavery. If you're owned by if you're a slave, your master has to look after you, even if there's no work for you. If you're a worker, you're dismissed and you have to look after yourself. I'm not saying that's a valid argument in favour of slavery, but some people use that argument to say, look, what's the difference to chattel slavery, wage slavery?
Question in the middle there.
Hi there. I'm not an SPGB. I'm Midlands Discussion Forum, so keep coming along to joining in on meetings here. I think the bit to stress is this... I think Adam's right, there's a very complex period, this sort of latter half of the 19th century. There's a lot of strange sort of movements taking place. But I guess I do want to stress the idea that Marx was supporting anything or trying to support anything that was getting rid of feudalism. That was class-based as well, about the only thing I have read prior to this or could find because of the problem with Marx's internet archive was the bit about America and the slave trade in America. And it clearly was, he was attacking the possibility that a particular class in the South of America would actually need to start expanding and spreading its type of production. So I think the thing is to go back a bit further, to take it more to the extremes. It's very complicated, that end of the 19th century. The point is you can't have socialism, you can't have working class taking over society in a feudal society. The working class doesn't exist and there's a totally different structure. So capitalism was needed to get rid of the feudal classes, the classes running feudal society, and take over and introduce a different type of manufacturing system, which involves wage slavery. And it's the condition of wage slavery that gives us all the possibility of creating a socialist or a communist society. And that's the important bit. And yes, I think it did get complex at the end of the 19th century. But that was the intention there. I mean, I'm not going to dispute about whether it was right and wrong on all occasions. I don't think that matters too much. The purpose was to get rid of the remnants of feudal aristocracy. And I'm going to agree with Adam that the First World War marked the absolute end of that. The old regimes you were talking about, Prussia and Austria and Russia, collapsed and were clearly capitalists from then on. And that's the basis. I think the SVGB, when it was formed, was actually quite in advance of many others in that sense, that it was saying that capitalism is now obsolete. Now is the time for the working class to create socialism. It was seeing a change of period. So that's where there is a significant difference between the wars that were taking place with Russia and Germany and France and so forth in Europe, and the wars that were being taking place in the 20th century in Europe. Those are simply conflicts between different capitalist blocs rather than anything else. And for us as socialists, then the issue is how do you create socialism out of that? What is the conflict now is purely between working class and a capitalist class.
No, as I said, I mean, I think you could, it's a perfectly plausible argument to say that Marx and Engels were right in the conditions of the 19th century, but wrong in the conditions of the 20th and 21st century. I mean, I think that's the...
I don't think that's what I said.
Well, no, you did. You were saying... What you were saying was that... Well, you were implying...
I'm saying... I'm bringing the conditions of the period of change, so they couldn't have been commented.
Well, I mean, that's how I was just coming to. I mean, if you think that capitalism... The world wasn't ready for socialism in the 1850s or even the 1860s and 1870s, then... Before you can have socialism, you have to have capitalism. It's a logical position to take. You should support the development of capitalism. I mean, but I think it might be a logical position to take, but I don't see how it can be taken, how a socialist could psychologically say, I think workers have got to become, you know, wage slaves first before they could be, you know, which... So, in fact, basically it's this. If you were a socialist in the 19th century, and that part of it before the material basis for socialism had been established, you were in an impossible position. Well, that's it, basically, and that's...
Just say one bit I wanted to mention. I mean, that issue of what support means... Sorry, I won't be long. That support that they were giving to capitalist movement, this extension, was very critical, wasn't it? It wasn't simply open. You can do anything you like. They were very critical of what was actually taking place under capitalist regimes and by those regimes to fight feudal regimes.
question or statement here.
I want to ask Adam to comment or elaborate. Was there a time when Marx spoke about different modes of production? For instance, the Asiatic mode of production. And the different parts of the world were developed economically on different processes, different levels. So what might have been okay, what might have been precipitous for some parts of the world in moving towards socialism wouldn't happen somewhere else. I don't know if I made that clear. What I'm on about is that, that Marx talks about different modes of production in the world at a given time, and one of them being an Asian mode of production. Could you comment on that?
Yes, but I mean, that's why I was hesitant.
I was listening to what you were saying.
Hesitant to use the word feudalism to describe these, describe particular Russia. I mean, basically, I think what you've got, if you like to see the evolution of society, you could say it starts off as primitive communistic society, then it becomes a class society. And there are various forms of class society which are based on a class controlling, the land. I mean, feudalism, as it developed in Western Europe, didn't develop all over the world. We had the king and the people in feudal term, the barons and the rest of the aristocracy. What you had, it's been called Oriental despotism, where you have one despot and him and his entourage control everything. Say socialism had been established in Western Europe in that time where capitalism. This is the argument that has been had about our attitude towards the Russian Revolution. We're only saying that, for instance, Russia on its own couldn't pass from whatever it was, Oriental despotism, to socialism. But if the rest of the world had gone socialist, it could. So we're not getting into a position to say in this century, the 20th century, that countries like Russia and India and China have to pass through capitalism before you can have socialism. You could have world socialism now, and these societies, pre-capitalist societies, for want of a better term, could be integrated into a socialist world. But they could, if you like, skip the capitalist stage as long as the industrialized, developed parts of the world went socialist. But
okay. The question.
And that wasn't actually the position of the left in the early 1900s. Because Kautsky, for instance, said in particular that Russia would have to go through its own capitalist stage before it could possibly become socialist, irrespective of what was happening. In the late 1800s, they had this view that Russia might be able to be absorbed into some kind of federation of socialist countries, but they actually changed the position later on, look at what the Russian Marxists were saying, i.e. the Bolsheviks and the Mensheviks, before 1970, they were all up for establishing capitalism, supporting the introduction of capitalism in Russia.
Okay.
Yes, I mean, but I think... But that's our position as well, that in the absence of a socialist revolution in the rest of Europe or the rest of Europe and North America, in the absence of that, all countries have to pass through capitalism because there's nothing else. So the reason why capitalism had to develop or did develop in Russia is because there wasn't any alternative. I mean, it was a question of which kind of capitalism, state capitalism, private capitalism, or something like that. Capitalism dominated by the Tsar or something, it's, if you think that socialism can be established in one country, then you do see these stages, capitalism, socialism. But I mean, if on a world scale, if the world has been ripe for socialism since 1914 or 1904 or 1894 or whenever, it's a different perspective. The whole world could have become socialist then. Mm-hmm. But not one country, certainly not one backward country. So, given an absence of socialism in the more developed parts of the world, a country like like Russia, had to go through capitalism. Yes, yes. But I mean, both the Mensheviks and the Bolsheviks before 1914 did see that was the way forward. You know, a bourgeois republic in Russia, which would develop capitalism. You know, while waiting for the rest of the world to go socialist.
Okay, one here.
Yeah, I think one point that is probably likely to be emphasised quite a lot this weekend is the excuse for going to war. Now, Adam's been talking about Marx's attitude towards Russia as being an autocratic power ruled by the Tsar and his government as an excuse for supporting the Turks and the British in that particular campaign. And this has so often been permeating the excuses for waging war from the 19th century right up to the 21st century. If we think of Napoleon waging war to spread revolutionary progressive ideas. If we think of the excuses that the Allies in the First World War, Britain and France, against Germany, because it was a militaristic power with a Kaiser that had almost a type of semi-autocratic rule, although there was a German parliament. So the point that I'm making is this meeting has been an interesting starting point for trying to excuse war, trying to drum up support for war against some type of dictator or autocratic government, and this of course has nothing really, well, it's nothing at all to do with socialism.
To respond, Adam?
Well, except to say that for most of the 19th century, all the states were undemocratic or dictatorships of one kind or another. I mean, Britain wasn't a democracy in the 19th century. Okay, what it had was parliamentary control over the government, but the parliament wasn't elected democratically. In fact, democracy was regarded as something to be opposed because the ideal country would have been America or Switzerland, but the powers that had defeated Napoleon, they regarded democracy as a danger and something to be put down. Whereas, I don't think that was it could be invoked as an issue in wars in the 19th century. But even in the 20th century, the problem with that is in both the First World War and the Second World War, what was Russia doing on the side of democracy? In fact, I mean, in previous discussions on this, you've got these trenches in France on one side of the British soldiers, the other side of the German soldiers. Now, one third of the British soldiers won't have the vote, but all the German soldiers had the vote because there was universal suffrage in Germany, but there wasn't in Britain. So, which side is democratic? I mean, I only can say right. They had universal suffrage in France. So, anyway.
Yeah, to comment here.
You're right, of course, they were afraid of democracy, but also a double-edged sword was nationalism, because whilst, as you described, most of the armies were controlled by the ruling class, they got the fodder from the rural classes. They were very fearful of an educated working class, industrial working class, because they feared trouble in the ranks. And in Ireland, and certainly they were, and indeed in Wales, approaching the First World War, they were very reluctant to give Welsh or Irish recruits any autonomy within a real command within those armies, because they realised the power of nationalism themselves. But largely, right up to that time, it was just the fodder from the farms, the rural communities, and they were afraid of thinking people joining the army. That was the attitude of those who controlled the army at the time.
Thank you. Well, any more questions? Time. Oh, yes, there is one back there. Yeah, sorry.
Just a brief aside, really. You used the word or the expression jingoism or jingoistic.
Yeah.
I think that actually dates from the time of the Crimean War. As part of the propaganda effort to get the British Greek working class to support the war, part of the propaganda effort took place within the music hall, which was very popular in the 19th century. And there was a song that went about saying something like, "We don't want to fight, but by jingo, if we do, we've got the guns, we've got the men, we've got the money too. The Turk may have his faults, but while theirs are Britain true, the Russians shall not have Constantinople." It's also nice to know that there was a song in response to that saying, "We don't want to fight, so bugger off."
An interesting aside.
Maybe another hour's time.
Well, I think it's winding up time now, I should think. Well, have you come off the fence here, Adam, on was he right or wrong?
He was wrong, but...
You think he was wrong? Okay. But excusable in the circumstances.
Understandable, I suppose, yes.
Understandable in the circumstances. Okay, I think it's time we move on to the social now, isn't it, Mike? Yeah? Okay, thank you all, gentlemen.